Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bootstrap Founder Podcast. My name is Avid Kahl, and I talk about bootstrapping, entrepreneurship, and building in public. First, a word from a sponsor. MicroAcquire is the number one startup acquisition marketplace, and it's simply the most efficient way to sell a startup when you're ready to make your next move. Typically, as a first-time founder, you really have no idea what you're getting yourself into when you go through an acquisition. MicroAcquire wants to change that and empower founders when they're speaking with buyers and then really help streamline this whole process of getting acquired for the maximum price without any of the headaches that come with the acquisition if you do it by yourself. To date, MicroAcquire has helped hundreds of startups successfully get acquired and have facilitated thousands of millions in closed deal volume. So if you're thinking about selling a startup, you'll want to check out MicroAcquire. Go to microacquire.com to learn more. And now let's get started. In my conversation with Daniel Vassallo this week, I learned that Daniel uses social media, Twitter in particular, to find inspiration for his own work as a teacher and a content creator. Intentionally doomscrolling Twitter to come up with writing prompts and business ideas? Why not? If we consider this a strategic effort, not just wasting our time on social media, well then let's develop a few frameworks that lead to more tangible results. Today, I want to talk about finding ideas, problems, and points of tension that hint at practical business opportunities on social media. Now, I'm not a fan of idea-first thinking when it comes to building a bootstrap business. Too many great ideas litter the startup graveyards because they are solutions looking for a problem. But I won't dismiss the possibility of the proverbial genius shower thought. All I want to think about is how you can minimize the number of assumptions you have to get right for any idea resulting in a potentially successful business. The more you can find hints and signals of actual demand in your social feeds, the better. And that's right, we're not looking for ideas at all. Ideas are a consequence of solid research, not something we find. We'll look for the prerequisites for ideas, the validation signals, and our timelines. If you want to come up with ideas that have a higher than moonshot chance of becoming profitable, we need to get the basics right before we dive into disrupting the industry. Most successful indie hacker journeys look very similar in retrospect when it comes to ideas. The founders notice a signal for demand in their community. They dive into the underlying problem, they look at the existing market, and they come up with an improved solution. While this approach doesn't guarantee success, it's commonly part of the DNA of indie businesses that end up making it. So there we have it. If we want to use our social media feeds to find hints of demand, we have to look for signals and the problems they point at and iteration opportunities. Now, what's a signal? A signal is a statement made by a person or a group of people indicating a need, either very clearly, like how can I convert a Word document into a PDF? Why is this so hard? Quite clear. Indirectly. It takes way too long to turn this spreadsheet into a TPS report. What gives? No matter the shape and the directness here, a signal is a discrete and traceable event that includes a sender, a message, and any number of receivers. And within communities, the most common signals are complaints and requests for help. Whenever somebody rants about having a particular issue or attempts to find someone who can assist them with the solution to their problem, you should take note. While those signals don't point at the problem really, they're your starting point towards finding the underlying issues. The best part is that every complaint or cry for help has an originating social media account attached. It's quite valuable. There's a person behind that, frustrated enough to publicly talk about their problem, and then hopefully find compassionate peers to talk to, so other people who might have the same problem. If you ever wanted to find someone to explain to you why they have a problem and then explain the worst parts of it, this will be the person to talk to, the person complaining or asking for help. Give them a kind reply or ask about further details in a DM. It's probably a good idea to wait an hour or two after they vent on social media because you might not want to talk to them while they're still emotionally riled up, so they post, right? Wait a bit. But one thing is important for both these complaints and asks for help. The person uttering these things, they might not be able to fully describe or even understand the problem that they have. They might just feel that something takes too long or is too hard, but they can rarely point you to the exact reason why. You'll need to find several people who complain about the same thing to get reliable information about the actual underlying problem. A good rule of thumb is when certain topics of complaints and help requests increase in frequency or intensity over time. That can be hard to measure on platforms like Twitter because we don't really have access to tools like Google Trends inside these networks, but that just means that you'll have to develop a sense of quantity and quality over time yourself. Sticking around in a community will make this a breeze. If you build a habit of taking note every time you notice someone complaining or asking for help, you can quickly group these messages into a problem-adjacent topic from which you'll be able to infer the underlying issue easier. These topic trends will likely take the form of rather abstract notions. You'll end up with issues on the level of, has a problem creating a proper full-page screenshot, or they can't reliably export file as a machine-readable CSV file. Learning the specifics of these problems requires direct conversations after the fact with the people that are actually experiencing them. But looking for signals is only one of the many, many ways of arriving at an interesting problem to solve. Because if there's a three-way connection here, from person to problem to solution, looking for signals is taking the route from person to problem. But you can also invert these three parts and then reverse engineer solutions to arrive back at the problem that they solve. And those solutions are hiding in plain sight. They're existing tools, crude self-built hacks, and commonly shared resources within your communities. Existing tools are a treasure trove of problem indicators because two things are true here. People are actually using these tools to solve their issues, and someone is running a profitable business providing a solution to them. You're looking at a validated budget and a pretty clear hint at an underlying problem. Problems tend to be hidden, both from you and to some degree also from the people experiencing them. So that's why you have to reverse engineer them from the solutions and products people use and find useful enough to try. So let's take an example here. On Twitter, most high performer accounts, people who use Twitter a lot, are using some sort of automation for their content. They schedule tweets, they run automated giveaways or discount operations, and they regularly purge low-quality followers or allow elaborate analytics tools to unearth interesting audience insights. So when we dive into each of these solutions, the tools that they use, we can then infer a few very likely underlying problems. Let's look at tweet scheduling. The person operating the account probably doesn't have the time to submit tweets manually all day. They likely have an optimal schedule too, unlike most non-professional Twitter users who use the app randomly. They might run multiple accounts simultaneously, and they want to avoid mistakes doing this. They want to reach other time zones with their tweets, so they automate time-delayed amplification. All these problems are just coming up when you think about who schedules tweets and why do they do it. Same goes for automated sales on Twitter. The account owner probably wants to run time-limited sales that have a lot of engagement without manually tracing every single sale outside of Twitter and reporting back in. Again, it's about saving time. They want to tap into this FOMO that comes with real-time sales updates, automated ones too. And they need to create the perception of scarcity, so they need to immediately show when something gets sold. Again, lots of interesting problems here. Automatic follower hygiene, like blocking people automatically if they're of a low quality. Hey, at a certain size, the amount of new followers you get on Twitter outpaces your capacity to check them for quality or alignment. I can tell you that because that is happening to me right now. But the more followers you have, the more critical it becomes to remove low quality and bot accounts, or your impressions with your tweets are wasted. Professional Twitter users look to stay ahead of malicious actors like this that could impact their bottom line. Finally, analytics and extended analytics at that. Once you use Twitter professionally, you need certain insights into the performance of your content and who engages with it. And you likely want to see how you can improve the reach of your content and find other communities to expand your following into. The default analytics provided by Twitter, they are not detailed enough by far to make any meaningful inferences. So here you have it. That's a solid list of problems just in one particular niche from looking at the tools that people use. A quick tip to spot these things in practice, look for people sharing how-to videos that they record themselves or screenshots of their day-to-day work that they take and share. Take note of the icons in their taskbars and menu bars and whenever they switch applications. If you can't figure out what you're looking at, just ask. People tend to love talking about their shiny tool collections, and you should see me when someone asks me about the acrylic paint collection that I use for miniature painting. I will talk about this for hours if you let me. So talk to people, ask them what they use. And beyond investigating screenshots, go one level deeper and follow people to the communities of outcome that they mention in their conversations. Often someone will recommend a niche Discord or a Slack instance where they found helpful people, or mention a web forum with a treasure trove of resources in a pinned thread or something. Join those communities and continue your investigation there. You'll even find more niche-specific conversations in those communities from which then to source signals and demand indicators. The kinds of problems discussed in these communities also tends to be more specific and reflected than on social media in general. But either way, wherever people talk about their challenges, you should listen. Notice how all the potential problems we looked at just now differ in urgency and importance. Still, they all have some degree of financial or reputational impact on the person behind the account. And now that you have a list of problems, you can look for signals from real people that indicate that the solutions in the space are not adequately solving the problems at the moment. And that's when you arrive at the kind of trace of demand that is as close to a business idea as possible. The slight but meaningful iteration on an existing product. How often have you seen someone talk about wanting a product that everybody uses already, like Google Sheets or VS Code or Notion, but customized to a particular use case that would be great for them, but it's not too attractive to these more general tools? Or there might be a slightly aged product that hasn't been updated in years because people have got used to it. And the development has kind of stalled, and they're focusing on retaining legacy customers instead of keeping up with the demands of new market entrants. There are many iteration opportunities out there. You just have to kind of know what you're looking for. And there are two significant indicators. People asking for recommendations, or even more apparent, wondering about alternatives to the products they already use. In either case, they are very well aware of the problem, which makes it significantly easier for you to validate and scope it, but that also means that other entrepreneurs have had an equally easy time just spotting those issues and opportunities. You'll be looking for low-hanging fruits, and we're all looking for low-hanging fruits. So these are the shiny ones that we tend to spot immediately and probably take action on immediately as well. But hey, still interesting opportunities here. When people ask for recommendations, they tend to lack awareness of the solution space around their problem. Right? They haven't found anything useful yet, but they trust that people further ahead on their journey towards expertise or whatever it might be, they know something that they don't know. And instead of pouncing on the opportunity to sell them something right now, when you see them asking for recommendation, observe what kind of answers they get. That's a little trick here. Just shut up and listen for a second, and then check back later to see if those recommendations actually helped. Because if they did, okay, interesting. But if not, the person who didn't get help is now a prime candidate to talk to about why the existing product landscape couldn't solve their problem. So when you see community members asking for alternatives instead of recommendations, they already use a solution that doesn't work well enough for them, and they want something better. And this is the perfect iteration candidate, provided that you can find an angle to significantly improve the product without reinventing the wheel. It's a challenging balance to strike here. People expect your iteration to still fit into their existing workflow, but improve it noticeably. That's the hard part to get right. In all cases, take note of these conversations, both for recommendations and for people looking for alternatives, and then check back after a while, maybe a week, maybe a month, to see which solutions satisfied people and where there's clearly still a chasm between what people have and what they actually need. And now that we know the kinds of messages to look out for, let's not forget that not all that glitters is gold. Here are a few false signals, idea traps, if you will, that you shouldn't want to get blinded by. Let's start with other people's ideas. Any message starting with "you should totally build" that can be safely ignored. While there might be a glimmer of a signal in there, it's usually skewed beyond repair. It's the modern version of Henry Ford's "Fast the Horses" quote. People rarely have the frameworks to actually come up with marketable product ideas. They just mix and match what they already know into some nightmare feature mix and then consider this to be a viable business opportunity. That's usually not the case. Try staying away from pre-formulated ideas. If you engage with them at all, only use them to discover the underlying problem. I will also caution you to be very careful with ads on any social media platform. I'm not talking about running ads. That's fine. That can be a valuable thing for your own future sales efforts. But I don't think that the existence of an ad is any indication that the product being sold or advertised actually solves a critical problem that you can build a business around. It's not validation. Too many sales and marketing professionals use ads as an experiment for their sales campaigns, but they're just trying to find the perfect creative that gets the most attention. The fact that you were shown an ad, that says more about the platform's ad mixer and its algorithm's impression of you than it does about your community and the problems within. And since we don't really have any insight into the performance of those ads, I would skip them as a reliable signal. And what really matters in all of these things is the reliability of the hints and indicators that you listen for. So be skeptical of anything that wants to convince you of something. If it's not a person actually communicating honestly with their peers about a genuine challenge, it's probably an intentional message put there for commercial reasons. And those aren't as factual as we need them to be for our purpose of finding solid business opportunities. You can learn a lot from social media communities. They are a treasure trove of opportunity. You just have to know what you're looking for. So instead of scrolling mindlessly the next time you go to Twitter, try spotting the demand signals in the many, many messages that stream through your activity feed every single day. And that's it for today. Thank you for listening to the Bootstrap Founder podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Arvid Kahl, ARVIDKAHL. You'll find my book, Zero to Sold and The Embedded Entrepreneur, and my Twitter course, find your following there as well. If you want to support me and the Bootstrap Founder podcast, please follow my YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast in your podcast player of choice, and leave a rating and a review by going to ratethispodcast.com/founder. All of this will help me and the show, and that would be great. So thank you very much for listening today, and have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.